Have you begun to prepare your speech for the convention? Will you speak at the convention?
It's hard to say. That is, doesn't appear that I'm going to be the nominee, so I'm not going to be determining the scope of the convention.
And that became the first sign. I'll tell you what, when I started with the Bernie campaign more than a year ago, I really did not think that I was ever going to have to cut that audio for the show. And then, of course, I did and just played it. But that was the first sign that we got this year that clearly it's not happening. Now, if you look at your Facebook feeds, it's a whole different thing. Massive, massive lying to one another is happening inside your Facebook feed. We're going to get it at the convention. Bernie is still in this thing. You just need to call up your senators and your House members, and gosh darn it, we still have this.
We are now working with the Clinton campaign. We came together on higher education, and let me congratulate her. I think this is an extraordinarily powerful proposal that will mean so much to millions and millions of young people. We're working on some other ideas, and I think at the end of the day, there is going to be a coming together, and we're going to go forward together and not only defeat Trump, but defeat him badly.
So that's key. So you're not denying the report that there are talks about a possible endorsement?
That's correct.
It seems to me that the Never Hillary people, who some of them are actually Trump people, the so-called burners for Jill Stein, now, those seem to be the only folks that are still in denial about this Bernie Sanders thing. And we got the endorsement. But it seems that they are the only ones who are in denial, because the Republicans, for a long time, have realized that this is where it's going. But I understand that is because they exist inside the same rigged system.
So Jack and I had a conversation. The next president, whoever he or she, most likely she's going to be, needs to get these defense cuts set aside.
That was Lindsey Graham saying more than a few months ago that he's pretty certain that she's going to be the nominee and that she is going to be the president. Now, it's no secret that Lindsey Graham does not like Donald Trump. So here's what has happened. In the last week, we've had the RNC finally. Their convention came. It was nutty as hell. And it has now gone. And we saw a lot of hatred, a lot of fear, a lot of racism, a lot of misogyny, all the things that you would expect to come out of the RNC convention. And then there's this. Oh, don't worry. He's never, ever gonna be president. Maybe. I'd like to think that he's never gonna be president. I understand that this year's not really all that great for anybody except for the KKK, because they finally have one of theirs as a candidate for the presidency.
The insiders wrote the rules of the game to keep themselves in power and in the money. That's why we're asking Bernie Sanders voters to join our movement so together we can fix the system for all Americans so important.
Are there Bernie Sanders supporters out there who are willing to vote for one white supremacist Donald J. Trump? The answer is yes. Now, I try to explain this to people. A lot of folks are surprised. I don't understand how she got it. If you look at my Facebook feed, that's your bubble. If you talk to my friends, that's your bubble. If you talk to my family, that's your bubble. Those are the bubbles that you exist inside. So, I try not to exist in bubbles, but I can't help that I do in quite a few. I step outside of them, and I make myself uncomfortable at times in the pursuit of knowledge, but even for me, I'm inside of a bubble just like anybody else is. And inside of mine, inside my social media feed, I'm seeing, you know what? Maybe I will vote for Donald Trump. Because a vote for Donald Trump means that the party will finally get its SH together. A vote for Donald Trump would be so bad for America that it would unrig the system. Hold on, holy hell. How do you go from one Bernard Sanders, peacenik, a man of Christ, a loving person, anti-war. How do you go from that guy to the guy who hates Mexicans, calls them rapists, says that African Americans naturally have a criminal gene? This is a thing. How do you go from that to Donald Trump? But it's happening. And I don't know how much of it is real or not, but it makes me sick that it's even out there. So then they held on to this dream. She's gonna get indicted! Is she? She's gonna get indicted. What she did was clearly wrong. No one's ever done anything. Whoa, easy. Did she delete emails? Probably. So did George W. Bush. And when the George W. Bush administration investigated it, nothing happened. Did she delete emails? Probably. And when the head of the Justice Department, or the head of the FBI, both of whom were appointed by her former boss, investigated it, they found nothing. Is that a rigged system? Probably. And I'm not sure why anybody was surprised when it came down that she was not going to be indicted. But you couldn't help but think, while listening to James Comey, the head of the FBI, that man, he really, really wanted to indict her.
Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. For example, 7 email chains concern matters that were classified at the top secret special access program at the time they were sent and received.
James Comey is a Republican and a man of integrity. A lot of people don't remember this, but George W. Bush was spying on Americans. Now, he said that he did so that he could find terrorists in America. And he began spying on people. And then when the program was found out about, he had his attorney general, Gonzalez, go to the hospital bed of John Ashcroft, who was lying in bed at the time, sick, and asked him to sign off on this program for spying on Americans. It was James Comey that went to the hospital, rushed to the hospital, racing through traffic, and got there before Gonzalez did and said, "You are not going to ask this ill man to sign off on your criminal behavior." So when Comey says that there wasn't enough evidence there to prove intent, that she broke the law, she clearly did some things wrong, I believe him.
As a result, although the Department of Justice makes final decisions on matters like this, we are expressing to Justice our view that no charges are appropriate in this case. I know there will be intense public debate in the wake of this recommendation, as there was throughout the investigation. What I can assure the American people is that this investigation was done honestly, competently, and independently. No outside influence of any kind.
My feed just exploded when this happened. You would have thought that the world was coming, crashing in. Oh my God. But I saw it coming. I knew she wasn't going to be indicted, even if she did do something wrong. Put James Comey at the helm, and you know what? Maybe there wasn't enough evidence. Hard to say, but it doesn't matter. But Bernie folks thought that perhaps if she got indicted, she'd have to step away from running for president. And then Bernie Sanders would just step in. And I've said that on this microphone a number of times, and I said, you don't want to do that. Because you're sending in the second choice. You're sending in a wounded animal. I understand that the polls say that Bernie has a better chance. But that's not the way these things look. Look at how demoralizing it was to the party and the country at large to find out how rigged the Democrat system was. And now you want to send in the second choice of Americans after the first choice got indicted, and you think that you're going to win in November? Are you effing insane? And then Trump. Oh, Trump. Trump and the Republicans wanted this indictment too. Trump wants it because he'd like to win. The Republicans want it because they would like for Trump to win. They feel like he can't win unless she gets indicted. And then, of course, Bernie-crats wanted her indicted because they figured that Bernie would just get to step in and everything would be great. President Bernie! I don't lie to myself. And although I exist in bubbles just like anybody else, I understand how this whole thing works.
Bernie Sanders, who's the most angry about this? I think the one with the most to lose is Bernie Sanders. Because honestly, he was waiting for the FBI primary. And guess what? He just lost today the FBI primary. He lost the FBI primary. Bernie, my poor Bernie. Oh, Bernie, I feel so badly for Bernie. But you know what? A lot of Bernie Sanders supporters are going to be voting for Trump because Bernie Sanders was right. Bernie Sanders was right about a couple of things. He's right about the system being rigged, but he's also right about trade.
He's unfortunately right to some degree. Now, he doesn't really care, but we know that he's right to some degree because we've heard that sentiment expressed by people. You know what? I didn't get Bernie. I'm just going to go vote for the white supremacist. Congress, being run by Republicans right now, was so upset about this. almost as upset as the Bernie-crats were.
How could they not indict her?
So they drug James Comey in front of the House, and they made him testify for hours and hours and hours. And luckily, there was one gentleman there, who one of the Democrats on the panel, who said, you know what? This entire thing is a sham. You guys don't really care. Much like a lot of the Bernie-crats, they don't really care about justice. They just saw this as a way to get their guy in. And the Republicans are no different. They also don't really care about justice. Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, they too had private servers. They too sent classified information. George W. Bush, tens of thousands of emails were deleted. When he went in front of the 9/11 commission with Cheney, they wouldn't do it under oath. They wouldn't do it on camera or into a microphone. And the people in the room were not allowed to take notes. Only what fits in your head that you're able to retrieve once you leave this room. That's it. The Republicans aren't concerned about justice.
Today's hearing is political theater. There's not even the pretense of trying to get at the truth. This is a desperate attempt under an extraordinary set of circumstances, an emergency hearing. I don't know what the emergency is, other than one side is about to nominate somebody who is a pathological narcissist who, you know, is talking about banning Muslims and Mexicans crossing the border who are all rapists and women who are pigs, and terrified at the prospect of the consequences of that in the election. So let's grab onto whatever we can to discredit or try to discredit the other nominee, putative nominee. And you took away their only hope. And so the theater today is actually trying to discredit you.
And that was Jerry Connolly on the panel saying what everybody in the room knew to be true. And so this is where we're at now. He is their nominee. He got enough votes at the convention. He got up and he gave a 74-minute speech that really sounded like it was written by Richard Nixon. He's now their nominee. And Democrats, whether you like it or not, she is your nominee.
It is no secret that Hillary Clinton and I disagree on a number of issues. That is what this campaign has been about. That is what democracy is about. But I am happy to tell you that at the Democratic Platform Committee, which ended Sunday night in Orlando, there was a significant coming together between the two campaigns, and we produced by far the most progressive platform in the history of the Democratic Party.
I talked about the people that Senator Bernie Sanders, I was calling him Brother Sanders, put on the panel, all the progressives. And one of the most consequential that he ended up putting on that panel ended up being one Cornel West, who was pushing for universal health care.
No, I just think it's very important that we don't sanitize and sterilize what Brother Bernie Sanders talks about when he talks about health care as a right, as opposed to a privilege. See, voting rights was a privilege for a long time. You had white brothers with property and white brothers without property. Women didn't have the right to vote. So it remained sanitized. It was an abstraction for a small group. But it functioned as a privilege. Black folk didn't get it until 65. So this language is so abstract that when Bernie Sanders says it's a right, he wants to specify the ways in which voting rights is universal, the right to join your own church, mosque, synagogue, temple, universal, the right to express yourself critically, universal. Right now, given the magnificent breakthrough of the Affordable Care Act, it's not a right. It's still a privilege of 29 million fellow citizens do not have access to it. That's what women were told in 1918. Voting rights is a right, but you don't have it. Sorry about that. But it's coming. It's coming. It's going to come because we organize and fight for it.
You say, but the platform doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We didn't get our candidate. We're going home.
Actually, it does matter. And when the Republicans got together and wrote their platform, they wrote the most anti-LGBT platform they have ever had. It's 2016. Recently, we got marriage equality, but these guys actually sat down and said, screw those people. And now, the Bernie-crats,
heading into the convention, still holding on. We're gonna get this!
Secretary Clinton has won the the Democratic nominating process. And I congratulate her for that.
The applause line in that one was actually 20 or 30 seconds long. I cut it down a bit, but he said it. And there it is. She won the Democratic nominating process. Rigged, fine, but she won it. She's going to be the nominee now. And I understand this leaves a lot of folks out in the cold, but we're all grown-ups here. We have to face this.
She will be the Democratic nominee for president. And I intend to do everything I can to make certain she will be the next president of the United States.
And he explicitly endorsed her. He joined her in North Carolina. He got on stage with her. He explicitly endorsed her. He thanked all of his supporters. His supporters went nuts and started setting garbage cans on fire and crashing their cars on the street. And oh my God, it sucks to lose. It sucks. But what sucks more than that is a sore loser.
Hillary Clinton understands that we must fix an economy in America that is rigged and that sends almost all of the new wealth and income to the top 1%. Hillary Clinton understands that if someone in America works 40 hours a week, that person should not be living in poverty. She believes, we all believe, that we must raise the minimum wage to a living wage. And further, she wants to create millions of new jobs by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our water systems, our wastewater plants.
We're going to get into income inequality. We're going to get into marriage equality. We're going to get into all these progressive issues that mean so much to so many of us. And I'm also going to get into what I saw when I woke up this morning and why I think Trump has a better than good chance of actually winning the election. But understand this, Bernie-crats, never Hillary people, the folks that have worked so hard on this campaign, and social media was no small part of it. There's a reason why all these campaigns now hire somebody to put to work social media. That's their job all day long, is to just work social media. And it's because that kind of a thing does make a difference in public opinion. But understand this, he's not going to get the nomination this week. After he gave his speech in North Carolina endorsing her, he got on a plane. He went back to Washington, D.C., and as soon as that plane touched the ground, he said farewell to his Secret Service. He stepped off that plane, no longer candidate for President Bernie Sanders, but Senator Bernie Sanders, the most powerful senator in America. And I understand that everybody thinks that what happens is whatever the president wants done. Pretty clearly, that's not the case. What happens that is of most consequence to all of us is what happens inside the halls of Congress. And there's too many folks that are willing to just dump this entire movement now because they didn't get every single thing that they wanted. But I am not one of those. If ever there was a time to stay in this fight, if ever there was a reason to stay in this fight, oh baby, that time is now.
As Bernie and his supporters have argued so eloquently, we won't get anywhere unless we overhaul our campaign finance system. It is past time to end the stranglehold of wealthy special interests in Washington and get back to government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That's why, as president, from my very first days, I will make campaign finance reform a top priority. We will do everything we can to overturn Citizens United. And we will require everybody, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, whoever, to disclose all of their donors. And while we're at it, We are going to create a small donor matching system to make it easy for more Americans to be elected at every level of government.
I listened to her entire speech, and it really sounded like Bernie Sanders wrote it, word for word.
And here's another radical idea. Let's make it easier to vote, not harder. Let's fight back against attacks on voting rights across the country, attacks that disproportionately affect low-income voters, people of color, students, the elderly, and women. That means we need to restore the Voting Rights Act and then keep going. All Americans should be automatically registered to vote on their 18th birthday.
She knows that she's not going to win without Bernie Sanders supporters. And more every day, she's getting more of those on board. And I understand that there's always going to be some people that insist that they're not going to vote for. They're going to vote for Donald Trump. Fine, go for the white supremacists. They're going to go for Gary Johnson. Great, a libertarian. Those are the guys who play in the sandbox all day. Good for you. They're going to vote for Jill Stein. Really? The candidate that's not on the ballot in all 50 states. Good luck with that, sweetheart.
So I need your help. Please join this campaign. Make it your own. You can take out your phone right now and text JOIN, J-O-I-N, 47246, or go to HillaryClinton.com. We accept $20, $27 donations too, you know.
All right, I understand that her delivery with the humor is not quite as good as his is. But what about the rest of the campaign? What about Jane? Jane has essentially gone back to being a private citizen. What about his campaign manager, Jeff Weaver? Well, we got that answer pretty quick. Jeff Weaver went on the air with Rachel Maddow to talk about the end of the campaign.
You know, Bernie Sanders talks about this political revolution. As you've heard him say many times, if he were elected president, he would need millions of people on the mall to help force the Congress to do what needs to be done. I think if Hillary Clinton's president, she's going to need that as well. We need to create this mass movement of people that started with Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. But this was never about one campaign or one candidate. This is about transforming the country and mobilizing people from one end of it to the other. And we're going to do that.
Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are two people that I feel like when they got into the race, they really didn't think they were going to become president. For Donald Trump, he just wanted to make some money. He just wanted to raise his brand. He just wanted some bigger name recognition. So when he stamps Trump on some crap that's made in China, he can charge a little bit more for it. Bernie, I feel like he just wanted his issues to be a part of the conversation. I've been listening to Bernie Sanders talk for more than a decade. Every week he's gone on Tom Hartman's show, and I've listened every week. Almost never missed it. These are his issues, and his growing frustration came with the fact that these issues weren't being addressed. Now they are. Now they're being said by the candidate that he almost walloped. He got 47% of the vote. Now these issues are being talked about. Now they've been introduced into the platform. And now they're going to be introduced by America's most powerful senator. But wait, the never Hillary people are a problem. And the Sanders campaign admits that.
You know, many people thought when Ronald Reagan was president, he was so extreme that he was going to usher in a great progressive revolt. Well, what happened instead was that the politics in America moved sharply to the right, including the Democratic Party and the corporate takeover of the Democratic Party. Now, we've almost left that period behind. You know, there's still a little bit of a hangover with groups like Third Way, corporate-funded groups like Third Way. But the Democratic Party is back on its historic trajectory, and we need to move forward. And some people may say we're not moving forward fast enough. But look, Bernie Sanders fought very hard in this contest, but he did not win. Hillary Clinton won. And we have got to support her to keep this country going forward. We cannot leave our children in the hands of Donald Trump. That would be a tragedy.
And that's what I'm hearing from more than a few people. It's fine. Let Donald Trump win. And the Democratic Party will just become more progressive. He'll be so bad for the country. The country will never, ever go the way to, way to, way to, way to, way to get to know your history, love. And it goes like this. Ronald Reagan, who was seen as an effing joke when he initially ran for president in the 70s, who then came back and ran for president again in the 80s, seen as nothing more than a B-movie actor, not a nobody to some because he used to be a Democrat, a turncoat, and an absolute buffoon. But this buffoon became president. And then when he ran for re-election in 84, he got 49 out of 50 states. He crashed the economy. He busted up unions. He actually had a blanket amnesty program. He was a horrible, horrible president. And the Democrats looked at him and said, well, that must be what the people want. And the Democrats began moving to the right. You got the DLC. You got the third way, just like Jeff Weaver was talking about there. No, the Democratic Party moved even further to the right because they go, clearly that's where the country's at and clearly that's where we need to be. And no, with the election this year, and it happened in one cycle, don't forget about what we accomplished. With the election this year, we got the Democratic Party to move back to its more normal, more acceptable trajectory. Its original trajectory. And that's where it should be going. So Bernie Sanders endorses her, says that he's going to vote for her, says that he's going to work for her.
You're going to vote for Hillary Clinton in November, Jeff?
Yes, I am. I'll work for her between that now and then.
And then Jeff Weaver said, yeah, I too am going to vote for her, and I too am going to work for her. And the president has already began joining her on the trail.
Not only did I think she impress me during the campaign, but she frankly really impressed me in terms of how she handled the loss of that primary. She was a trooper. She came on board, started campaigning with me almost immediately, worked tirelessly. She was willing to set her own personal feelings and agendas aside to serve the larger cause and to serve the country. And that's part of the reason why I was willing to, you know, reach out to her. In fact, insisted on reaching out to her about serving as Secretary of State, because I thought that somebody who is able to set aside personal agendas to make sure that we actually are making this country stronger, more prosperous, safer, that's the kind of person who I could trust in my administration.
The 2008 campaign was also quite contentious, and they came together. And the way when you see them together now, you can't even remember how bad things were back in 2008. And you'll eventually see that with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. It's already started happening. And what of the man who introduced Bernie Sanders to many of us, Tom Hartman?
And let me say right now, I'm endorsing Hillary Clinton. I had said I have endorsed Bernie Sanders and I support Hillary Clinton. And Bernie's no longer running. He has taken himself out of the race. I endorse Hillary Clinton.
And here is where we are turning the corner. So we're heading into the election essentially right now. We've got 1 week. The Democrats are going to go. They're going to do their dog and pony show. And then it's on to the actual election. But there was an audio clip I cut a little while back from Cokie Roberts on ABC, who I thought said something pretty striking. Now, remember, this wasn't recently. I cut this several months ago and just been holding on to it. And I'm going to let you hear it now.
If Marco Rubio wins Florida, John Kasich wins Ohio, neither one of them can get a majority of delegates.
Then we do head to the convention. That's what happens. If they start winning winner-take-all primaries, then we start heading to the convention. And Glenn Beck was very interesting about that, because the truth is if Donald Trump has a vast number of delegates and the Republican Party tries to find some way to take it away from him, there will be civil war. And, you know, the truth is that they have only themselves to thank for this. Forget their policies. That's one whole set of things. But the fact is that Donald Trump was awful about Mexicans, awful about Muslims, awful about women, awful about the disabled, and they just kept their mouths shut. It took the Ku Klux Klan to get the Republican leadership to start.
And he is now their official nominee. After it became apparent that he was going to be their nominee, he got a bit of a bump. I imagine now that their convention is over, he'll probably see another bump. But here's something that didn't happen on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton, when it became apparent that she was the nominee, she did not see the same bump. Heading up to the RNC convention, her numbers were starting to look a little bit better. But right at the RNC convention, and even right now, she is in a dead heat with him in these three states, Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. If he takes one of those states, he's got a pretty solid chance of becoming president. If he takes two of those states, you better get used to saying Presidente Trump.
Let's take a look at Florida, where Clinton enjoyed an 8-point lead just last month. Clinton now trails Trump there, 42% to 39%. Ohio is still all tied up, 41 points each. In Pennsylvania, Clinton had just a one-point lead. They're still tied, but Trump is moving ahead, 43 to 41. On the question of honesty, that critical question, Trump leads Clinton by double digits in all three states, down 13 points in Florida, down 10 in Ohio, down 15 points in Pennsylvania. But Clinton crushes Trump on who is better prepared for the job, ahead 16 points in Florida, 23 points in Ohio, and 20 points in Pennsylvania. When asked who will do a better job at creating jobs, Trump, look at these numbers, is the hands-down favorite. He's ahead by 15 in Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And Trump is also the most trusted to handle the threat of ISIS. He's up 22 points in Florida, 11 points in Ohio, 12 points in Pennsylvania. That, of course, despite the fact, Joe, that she has the national security credentials having been Secretary of State for so long.
The Florida numbers might stick. The Pennsylvania numbers might stick. But the Ohio numbers, I don't think, will stick. Ohio is where they just had their convention. And John Kasich, who is their governor and who did not attend the convention, is a very, very popular governor in that state, among his constituents, obviously. And the numbers may not hold so well there, because it looks bad when the Republican governor of the state where the Republicans hold their convention does not attend. Back in 2008, after President Obama won, over on Fox News, they decided to break down the numbers, at least talk about them on TV, and they realized that the independents, the people in the middle, tended to go for Barack Obama. And they said, so I guess we can start counting these people as liberals, too.
Many of us have believed, and I still basically do, that this is a center-right country. And a lot of conservatives have taken the view that liberals are really on the wane. And if you look at tonight's exit polling that we've seen so far, those who self-identify as liberals are about 24%. Conservatives, 35%. Moderates, 40%. Now, this apparent outcome tells you one thing about those moderates, that there are in that category an awful lot of them who are actually liberals.
That was Britt Hume's analysis, but if you ask me, it seems like those people can be swayed really either way. Now, obviously, they went for Senator Obama back then because he was vastly different from the buffoon who had just run the country for the previous 8 years, who drug us into all these wars and who crashed the economy. But, once again, even though things are a lot better than they were in 2008, that's not what you hear when you turn on your TV, because remember, it bleeds, it leads. You hear that crime is going through the roof. No, it's not. You hear that more cops are being killed than ever. No, it's not. You hear that the world is an insanely dangerous place. Well, U.S. foreign policy does help make it that way, but the thing that scares the hell out of me is the absolute and outright racism. It's the end of the week for the RNC. That's what I'm taping right now. And when I woke up this morning and I looked out my front window, it was as if somebody had gone around and put a bunch of Trump signs in my neighborhood. Now, there were some before, but there's more now. And one of them is facing my house where I still have my Bernie sign up. What I heard at the Republican convention was an insane amount of racism. I heard a lot of Nazi talk. I heard a lot of Nixon talk. I heard a lot of fear-mongering. I heard a lot of racism. And I feel like the world around me now is buying into this. And nobody realizes who we're about to make president. It really did feel icky. It really did feel gross. It felt like I felt like I was being filmed. I go, what? Something doesn't seem right about this. But the world around us, your independents, I don't necessarily think that they're liberal, but I think that they can be swayed. And when they're being told that the problem is brown people, you can't help when somebody like a sitting Supreme Court justice, even she feels like she has to speak out against the Trump fire.
She didn't earn the nickname the notorious RBG for nothing. But what I will say is that in the past, I've been asked about controversial comments from other Supreme Court justices. Earlier, I don't know if it was earlier this year or at the end of last year, when Justice Scalia made some comments in an open Supreme Court hearing that many found to be quite controversial, possibly even racist. At that point, I declined to wade into that criticism, and I think I'll pursue a similar approach in this instance.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg came out and said some disparaging things about Trump, and she's not supposed to do that. And that kind of thing, unfortunately, will help the Trump campaign. She came out, she said her comments were inappropriate and she should not have shared them. But the Supreme Court, that is what the Republicans want. If they can put a bunch of young, ideological, white supremacists on the Supreme Court, they will rule this country for the next 30 or 40 years. Oh, that's fine. Let him become president. We'll just pick somebody else the next time around. There won't be a next time around. Certainly not in your lifetime. Because when he packs that court with hard right white supremacists, you're going to wish he didn't become president this year. And it's not enough to be a racist. Remember, this guy is also a sexist. Here is how he was introduced to a group of his supporters at a campaign stop.
I've heard people say, I don't know who to choose, Trump or Hillary. Even Bill Clinton chose other women. So you should too.
And Trump is no stranger to making sexist remarks.
I don't want to sound too much like a chauvinist, but when I come home and dinner's not ready, I'll go through the roof, okay?
Recently, I listened to a woman named Rose Tennant sit in on Sean Hannity's show. And I listen to Sean Hannity every day, at least an hour, every day. Well, almost every day. Most days, certainly. And Rose Tennant, as you can guess by the name, is a woman. And even the conservative women, and this blows my mind, even the conservative women have no problem being sexist towards the women.
I'm going to tell you something. Whenever I thought about the first female president or even vice president, you see that one day that you saw Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton on the stage together. When I envisioned something like that, it was never as two grandmas in pantsuits. I got to tell you, I never saw that in my mind's eye. But anyway, here they are, two grandmas in pantsuits, and the one grandma doesn't know, you know, if she should be doing this, or she doesn't really understand the email thing and the servers. I would suggest to you she understood very well.
And then her and her co-host decided that it would be pretty funny to mess around with calling Hillary Clinton the C word. No, no, no. This is a real thing. Don't go anywhere. Come back. Check this out.
I know what I'm saying. You asked me, did I assume that someone would know? Probably before this investigation, I would have. I'm not so sure of that answer any longer. I think it's possible, that she didn't understand what a C meant in when she saw it in the body of an email like that.
So, I don't know. Linda and I were talking. What could a C mean? I don't know, Linda. What do you think?
There's a lot of options. I mean, I know I'm conflicted and curious. Mm-hmm. And I caution myself about.
Caution is a C word.
Yes. You know, and I mean, I could be coffee, creamer. Do you take yours? You know, listen, I mean, there's just so many things, but I digress.
You do. But that was funny. I love this girl. What a sense of humor.
Joking around about calling another woman the C word. This happens on conservative talk radio with some frequency. And now, this is your candidate. Someone who has come out against Mexicans, who says that blacks have a criminal gene in their blood, who's called women fat pigs, dogs, said that they would look great on their knees, and now he's picked Mike Pence to be his vice president. Somebody who is so anti-gay, I'm pretty certain that the Westboro Baptist Church wouldn't even. Whoa, hey, buddy, you're a little extreme, don't you think? Richard Nixon said that he had a secret plan for ending the war in Vietnam. Trump has said that he has a secret plan for defeating ISIS. He could tell it to us now, but he wants us to make sure that he's president first. He's also Nixon. Nixon played funny with the Klan. Donald Trump has also played funny with the Klan. Nixon said that he was going to make our streets safer. Trump has said, I'm going to make our streets safer. Nixon called himself the law and order candidate, and right on cue,
we must maintain law and order at the highest level, or we will cease to have a country. 100%, we will cease to have a country. I am the law and order candidate.
Using fear and hatred in a campaign, and it begins to look like 1968. We played an ad here on the show a while back, and it was a little outside of what I generally do here because it was a four-minute ad, and I cut it down as much as I could, but I said the whole thing really, really is important. I cut out some of the pregnant pauses and whatnot, made it a little shorter, but even still, but that ad, One of the striking things about that ad was what was being said in it by a former Republican. And the other thing was that it was 4 minutes long. Usually ads are 30 or 60 seconds long. This was a four-minute ad that was being run against the Republican nominee that year. And so the Hillary Clinton campaign, trying to take a little something from history, has finally released their own 1968 ad.
Look, I was a Republican who voted for Eisenhower and Nixon. My father was a Republican. His father was. The whole family was. But Donald Trump, he's a different kind of man. This man scares me. A friend of mine said to me, listen, just because a man sounds irresponsible during a campaign doesn't mean he's going to act that way. Well, I don't buy that. Trump says we need unpredictability when it comes to using nuclear weapons. What is that supposed to mean? When a man says that, he sounds a lot like a threat to humanity. I've thought about just not voting, but you can't do that. That's saying you don't care who wins, and I do care. I think the party is about to make a terrible mistake in Cleveland, and I'm going to have to vote against that mistake on the 8th of November.
And the Clinton campaign went ahead and made a one-minute version. I understand it's not original, but if you know your history, you realize why that is such a striking thing. So now it's time for Hillary Clinton to pick a vice president. Who is she going to pick? I think that she should pick Elizabeth Warren. She needs somebody to her left. She needs somebody progressive. But it's two women. Two women can't win. Shut up. Stop that. Ain't nobody trying to hear that. Good candidates can win. Awful candidates can also win.
Donald Trump says he'll make America great again. It's right there. No, it's stamped on the front of his goofy hat. You want to see Goofy? Look at him in that hat.
I'm inclined to agree with her. I think that he has always looked goofy in that hat as well. And the great thing about that is because he calls her Goofy Elizabeth Warren. Because he calls everybody, he gives everybody a nickname. He brands everybody. Because he's good at these kinds of things. He's good at marketing. He's not good at actually getting anything done. But he is good at messaging.
Donald Trump is a loud, nasty, thin-skinned fraud who has never risked anything for anyone and who serves no one but himself. Donald Trump says Judge Curiel should be ashamed of himself. No, Donald, you should be ashamed of yourself. Ashamed for using the megaphone of a presidential campaign to attack a judge's character and integrity simply because you think you have some God-given right to steal people's money and get away with it. You shame yourself and you shame this great country. You just can't make this stuff up.
One of the things that concerns me more than a lot of other things is the fact that Donald Trump seems to be very cozy with dictators. He has praised Saddam Hussein in front of Republican audiences. And that just kind of went right by everybody. Not a big deal. He brags all the time about how Putin, who hasn't made an explicit endorsement, but who does praise him all the time. He's talked about how Putin refers to him as a genius.
Putin, he said Donald Trump is a genius and he's the real leader over in that country. And these people that I'm negotiating with all the time, these people on the stage with me, they said, you should disavow what Putin of Russia said. I said, I'm not disavowing that he called me a genius. Are you crazy?
It's nice that she's taken Elizabeth Warren on the road. It's nice that she has began adopting Bernie's platform and using Bernie's language in talking directly to Bernie supporters. It's nice to see her moving to the left. We shouldn't have to move her to the left, but this is the candidate that we are left with. As nice as it is to see those things, here's what I really, really need to see more of. And if we don't get this, then we're going to get a President Trump. Now follow me. Trade. When they talk about fear in the Trump campaign, they say, look at all these brown people taking your jobs. Look at all these Chinese people with your jobs. And by the way, that has nothing to do with the fact that those jobs are being taken by Chinese, being taken by Mexican. They are being given by corrupt corporations in America, corrupt employers. But we in America have always thought it to be a bad idea to go after the actual source of the problem. We've always decided that it's much better to scapegoat it on average working people. The folks that now have our jobs, thanks to our trade deals, they are average working people, just like you. Should they get our jobs? No. But they are not taking our jobs. Those jobs are being given to them by the corrupt trade deals that we have had over the last number of decades. NAFTA, GATT, the newest one, TPP. These things are going to send more of our jobs overseas and create courts where corporations can sue a country for lost or they see as potential lost profits if those corporations do not get what they want. What the Clinton campaign needs to start talking about more than anything, you can get on the campaign trail, you can say jobs, jobs, jobs all you want, and it doesn't matter. People understand that trade is the reason that we don't have those jobs anymore. And what the Clinton campaign needs to start talking about is trade, because Trump is already talking about it. And he's been talking about it for a long time now.
Can move their wealth and workers to foreign countries, all to the detriment of the American worker and the American economy itself. We reward companies for offshoring, and we punish companies for doing business in America and keeping our workers employed. They get punished. This is not a rising tide that lifts all boats. This is a wave of globalism that wipes out our middle class and our jobs along with it. We need reform, and we have to reform our economic system so that once again we can all succeed together and America can become rich again. We have to make America rich again.
Trump isn't going to do anything about trade. Trump does not give a damn about trade. Trump does not give a damn about your job. But he knows the right message. He knows what he has to say into a microphone in order to gain your trust. And I understand. I understand how awkward this is going to be for Secretary Clinton, because she helped draft TPP, even though she came out against it. It was her husband, even though the GATT and NAFTA, these things were signed, permanent normal trade relations, these things were signed by President Clinton and passed. They were passed by a Republican Congress. They were, in fact, signed by her husband. Now, she is not her husband, but Clinton, that is going to stick. And then there's another thing. So it came out this week, the week of the RNC, that John Kasich, and by the way, they really wanted Kasich's endorsement. They really wanted him to come to the convention. They really wanted him to speak, the governor of Ohio, the former presidential candidate. The Trump campaign told Kasich if he goes ahead and accepts the VP position, he will actually be the president or the most powerful VP ever. Because Trump has said numerous times into a microphone and in front of a camera that he does not want to be president. He sees his job as more ceremonial than anything. That's usually what the VP is, the whole ceremonial thing. Trump said his job, once he becomes president, will be making America great again. And the actual president will be whoever the VP is. And we found out who that is. It's Mike Pence, the guy who slashed healthcare funding in his state, which led to an AIDS outbreak. The guy who wants to close all the abortion clinics, all the women's health clinics. The guy who is so horribly anti-gay. And here's the thing about that. When asked about it, when he got in front of a microphone to answer to why he passed the RFRA law in his state, why he pushed for the RFRA law in his state, he couldn't even express himself. All he knows is that he doesn't like the gays. At the RNC convention, Trump walked up to him on stage to greet him and try to give him sort of one of these side kisses, and Pence pulled away. Whoa, that's dudes kissing dudes, sir. That doesn't happen in God. Hey, God's watching us right now. This is God's America. No dudes kissing. So the guy that you're actually voting for, if you're a Republican, or voting against, if you're more Democratic, is Mike Pence. That's the guy that's going to be your president. This from The Guardian.
Donald Trump does not want to be the president of the United States. From the outset, Trump's camp would have been satisfied to see him polling at 12% and taking second place to a candidate who might hold 50%. That's a fact. Stephanie Segielski, the former communications director of a pro-Trump fundraising group, wrote in March that a year earlier, she had sat in Trump Tower being told that the goal was to get the Donald to poll in double digits and come in second. His candidacy was a protest candidacy. Trump's rhetoric on the campaign trail indicated as much. How could anyone as undisciplined and impulsive seriously believe that he belonged in the White House? Alas, those spewings shot him to the top of the Republican ranks. The monster rose from the laboratory table and walked. And none was more surprised than Trump himself. More yet, he doesn't even think he's capable of doing the job himself. Last month, Trump's campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, said that as his vice president, Trump would need, quote, an experienced person to do the part of the job he doesn't want to do. He sees himself more as the chairman of the board than even the CEO, let alone the chief operating officer. In other words, Trump's presumption is surpassed only by his laziness. Now the not-so-good news. Trump does want to reign as supreme ruler. He seems to have in mind not a genteel monarchy, but the sort of arrangement that would appeal to, say, a Genghis Khan or a Robert Mugabe. Trump and Vladimir Putin have even confessed their mutual admiration. Meanwhile, his terrifying incuriosity about the rest of the world, let's just say, gives pause.
And even when top Republicans, now remember, they've made this guy their candidate. Even when top Republicans are asked to explain away his racism, they absolutely fall all over themselves. Sometimes, and multiple times in an interview, they don't know what to say. They know that their party is full of racists. They say it in back rooms to one another. But you can't say these racist things out loud.
He has called, he has essentially said he cannot be impartial because he's Hispanic. Is that not a racist statement?
No, I couldn't disagree more with a statement like that.
Is it a racist statement?
I couldn't disagree more with what he had to say.
Okay, but do you think it's a racist statement to say?
I don't agree with what he had to say. This is a man who was born in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
All of us came here from somewhere else.
Of course, in that clip, that's Mitch McConnell on Meet the Press talking about Judge Curiel. And it went on like that. And McConnell was absolutely unable to explain away. Now, I understand, coming to the end of the campaign here, there are a lot of hurt feelings for Democrats. For those of us that are more progressive, and that includes myself, we are absolutely unhappy with who the Democratic Party has decided to pick or rig the game for, however you want to say it. But I need you to not forget about all of the progress that we made. I need you to realize that something like a President Trump is not merely going to be a one-term thing. If he gets his Supreme Court nominees, if he gets his head of the Justice Department, how do you think that head of the Justice Department is going to respond to Black Lives Matter? If he gets his food inspectors in there, do you really think they're going to inspect food? If he gets his energy people into the Energy Department, do you really think we're going to move towards clean energy? If he gets his people on the Supreme Court, do you really think that marriage equality will last through the first year of a Trump presidency? Now, I'm not going to ask you to vote for Hillary Clinton because I wouldn't do that. But at the very least, stay engaged. Get involved. Don't just drop out and take your ball and go home. Get involved. Pick progressive congressmen. If Trump becomes president, perhaps he can be stopped by a progressive Congress. But as history has shown us, whoever the president is, he generally gets the Congress he wants, at least for his first half term. But we should fight against that anyway. We should try to make sure that that does not happen. We made a lot of progress. I need you to stay involved. I need you to stay engaged. I need you to not get pissed at Bernie Sanders. What Bernie Sanders did was a great and noble thing, and it will change politics for a generation. There are Bernie-crats running for office right freaking now. How does nobody see that? And that's a very important first move. Because if you don't like the people who are on the ballot, then you yourself can get on the ballot. You need to stay involved. You need to stay engaged. And as my man Bernie Sanders would say, you need to stay outraged.
We cannot allow ourselves to become used to the fact that we got hundreds of thousands of children in this country who are homeless. That is our greatest danger, becoming used to it and thinking that it is normal. It is not normal. It is an outrage. And never, ever lose your sense of outrage.
This Bernie supporter will not be sitting on the sideline for the next number of years. This Bernie supporter will stay engaged. This Bernie supporter is not pissed at Bernie Sanders. This Bernie supporter is not pissed at Elizabeth Warren. This Bernie Sanders supporter is pissed at the third rail DLC Democrats and the system, the awful system that even they are a part of. But you don't change a system by crying, taking your ball and going home. You change that system by remaining engaged. And you can send me all of the hate mail you want. I've got skin as thick as the day is long. And I've been in this for a long time. And I plan to remain in this until there is no life left in me. Stay engaged. Stay outraged. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. We are also over at Kiwi Station. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Kiwi Station app at the iTunes, or the Podbean app at the iTunes Store, or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Kiwi Station, yay! Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, send it to me, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, Jill Stein people, send me a hate mail. See if I give an F. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out. And we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Rejecting the KKK. Rejecting the white supremacists. Rejecting the white wizards. Rejecting white supremacists everywhere. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a special thanks to you listening. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I have woken you up, good morning.